Customer service, press 3.
Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach.
Our
sex, love, and relationships.
Changed.
We talk
Keep
about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better, and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting email this week. He says, thank you for taking my email in question. My girlfriend and I listen to you on the radio, and she respects your opinion as I do. So here's the question. I've been separated for 9 months. I'm working on a divorce. Is it okay to date? I believe it is. But she's not comfortable with being around people who know my divorce is not final. Can you help? He kind of answered it when he said, if she's not comfortable, it's not a good gig.
Well, this is Carol the Coach, and I got to tell you, it is so nice to be with you tonight. This is sex addiction, and we are talking about the disorder that plagues a lot of people that nobody's talking about, and that is so important for a variety of reasons. You know, this is an up-and-coming issue that many people are worrying about and they're reading about, but they don't know what to do with it. And so Hope, Strength, and Recovery with Carol the Coach is a way to get your needs met, to get the information that you've so badly need. And we have experts on the show almost every week, and when we don't, we have somebody who has the issue who's willing to talk about it to work with the rest of the people. You know, I'm a believer that when you have an issue, when you have a sexual addiction and you talk about it, you're helping hundreds of people out there. So I am so thankful for our callers, and if you do have a call tonight, that number is 646-595-3284, and we've got experts in the field. Tonight, we have Chris Countryman. He's a licensed clinical social worker in private practice in Indianapolis, and he has been working in the addictions field since 1990. He's worked with internet pornography and addicts since 1998. So this man has almost been working 15 years with people that have this addiction. You know, Dr. Carnes worked with people since the middle of 1980. And so I feel very fortunate that he's coming on. He has written 2 self-published books, Getting Internet Pornography Out of Your Life, and it comes in 2 versions. You know, one of the things that he knew is that you really need to talk with your church about this, and at the same time, the church just does not know what to do with it. So he wrote a non-denominational guide for Christians, Getting Internet Pornography Out of Your Life, and then he wrote a guide for Catholics with the same title, Getting Internet Pornography Out of Your Life. And that way, he could disseminate his information to the churches, and they could refer to him and to CSATs, you know, that's Certified Sexual Addiction Therapist, of which I, of course, am one. And if you are interested in obtaining his booklet, you need to go to his website, and that is directactionbooks.com. Now, this booklet gives readers a mix of both spiritual and clinical perspectives on internet pornography use. It doesn't preach or shame. Instead, it asks people to take a rigorous look at their porn use and the effects on their life. It offers both mental health and spiritual resources to help internet porn users get away from it and get back to a healthier sexuality. So he's coming on in about 10 minutes. And again, you can feel free to call him to talk with me. That number is 646-595-3284. Now, you may ask, why, Carol, would you do a show called Hope, Strength, and Recovery, Sexual Addiction with Carol the Coach? One of the things that I found early on in my practice is that more and more people, as they got tied in with the internet, were displaying behaviors that absolutely interfered with their life. It interfered with their relationships, and more importantly, it interfered with their self-esteem. And as a result, I said, you know, I need more information so I can help people with this issue. And I didn't really know what to do, so I got a couple of books and decided that I would study the field a little bit. And that's when I decided that I wanted to work with ITAP. And ITAP is a certification program that helps people get the information they need to really do great work with sex addicts. And, you know, since I graduated from that program a couple of years ago, I have probably had over 500 people that have come to me, contacted me and said, what do I do next? You know, oftentimes therapists don't necessarily know what to do with this issue. Now, you've got some therapists that actually have had the issue, and so they're especially skilled because they've lived this world. They know what to do. But I knew that I needed specialized training because I hadn't lived the issue. And yet I really wanted to help people to relieve the guilt and the shame they felt. You know, it's an issue that it's difficult to talk about. We don't talk about sex at all. And so I got certified, and you can always go to my website. That's www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach.com. Or you can go to my website, just carolthecoach.com. One of the most exciting things about getting certified is that we learned what to do with people who had this issue. And then, in addition to that, the third training encouraged people to do coaching. And most of you know I'm a personal life coach and a sexual addictions therapist and a psychotherapist. So I was so excited that my coaching certification was also going to help people with this issue. It's come full circle. And today I was talking with a man who, you know, he has rigorously followed the program. He has gone to 7, 8, 9 meetings a week. He has gotten a sponsor. He has been clean and recovered for a year. And he came in and he said, Carol, I still really have some cravings. Well, sexual addiction is helped if you do your SA or SAA work, and that means going to 12-step meetings. And what I know to be true through the big book, and that's AA, is that if you really work the program, and if you get a sponsor, and if you go through the 12 steps, and if you're rigorously honest, that craving will go away. That's what the promise says, is that the cravings will go away. But you have to work the program. And so I assured him that he had been doing a fantastic job in the first 14 months of clean time, but that he needed actually more time to be able to reduce the cravings. And so he believed me. He knew that that was true. And I was excited for him because, you know, when somebody works really diligently, the exhilaration you feel from knowing that you can make a difference not only in your own life, but in the lives of other people in the program, it's all about service. And for anybody who's done the 12 steps, you know that that 12th step is servicing others. And I'm sure Chris Countryman is going to be talking about some of that stuff, as well as how did he come to write, you know, his booklet, Getting Internet Pornography Out of Your Life, and why the religious community, why not the general public? He's got lots and lots of answers. I've met with this man. I have enjoyed everything I've learned from him. He's given me a lot of good feedback and a lot of good advice, and he's going to do that for you too. Now, every week I get three or four referrals from partners of addicts, and they too are really hurting. So just this week I received two books, and we are going to be working with Stephanie Carnes, who has a revised edition of Mending a Shattered Heart, a guide for partners of sex addicts. And then I got this incredible book from John Thoburn and Rob Baker with Maria Del Maso, and they are actually talking about clergy sexual misconduct. So I'm in the process of reading that book, and I'm going to be talking to you about that. Many of us know that the clergy can have problems with this. You know, what you repress can oftentimes rear its ugly head, and so that means that, you know, there's oftentimes professionals in power-packed positions, policemen, teachers, clergy, that also have difficulty with this sexual addiction. So I will be giving you a book report on that. Cannot wait as I finish that book up. And then Athili Anvari wrote a book called Love Addict, and it's called Sex, Romance, and Other Dangerous Drugs, and she's going to be on the show in a couple of weeks. So we are looking forward to having her on to talk about, well, what's the difference between sex addiction and love addiction? And there are some differences. So we got a lot of exciting things to come. Again, if you need anything, you can always email me at carolthecoach@aol.com. Go to my website, Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And I'm sure you can get some information from our expert who we've got on the line, Chris Countryman. Welcome to the show.
Thanks,
excited
to
have you on.
Thanks. Glad to be on.
Yeah. Now, you have made it your mission to help people understand internet pornography and to actually get that out of their lives. What initially got you to write these booklets? Because they're very readable. They actually have assessments or tests that you can take so you can decide, do you have a problem? What was the impetus for these booklets?
Well, I've been working in addictions, mostly substance addictions, since 1990. And about 1998, I had a number of people start showing up with internet pornography addiction. And what I found was that they reminded me a lot of cocaine users. They were very intense. They experienced a lot of peaks and valleys. And writing the booklet in 2008 and then self-publishing in 2009 was a result of seeing that there was a need for something that was both spiritually based and solidly psychologically based to offer them. So the booklet, Getting Internet Pornography Out of Your Life, comes in two versions, a guide for Catholics and a non-denominational guide for Christians.
And you obviously felt that was important to differentiate the two. Can you share why?
Well, I think it's, as much as anything, some of the background resources and some of the needs of each of the two communities. The booklets are probably 95 to 98% the same, but some of the resources are particularly different, drawing on Catholic history, drawing on Protestant history, and the needs and experiences in each of those communities.
Well, and these booklets can be found at www.directactionbooks.com. These were self-published. You had to feel good about putting these out because this is easy information to take a look at that will guide you to the next step.
Right. This is just an attempt to give people a chance to take a look at what's going on in their lives, get some kind of grounding for the effects that porn use has had in their lives, and then help them move forward with resources to deal with it and make sense of their lives from there.
Makes sense. So now why did you write it for the religious community in general as opposed to the general public?
Well, it's a good question. Part of it is that the religious community were the people that were actually approaching me about this. I actually was approached by a group of Catholic priests at one point who said, you know, we've got people in the confessional, for example, for 3 to 5 minutes. What can we give them? And the few resources that were out there were either large books, 200 pages, or some things that were written by people who really didn't know anything about internet pornography and its problems. So I said, I'll write this. At the same time, I was having conversations with Protestant clergy as well as students that I was teaching at Christian Theological Seminary in the addictions class. And they were saying, there's a need here. We're seeing this need. What can we do? So it was somewhat at their request, somewhat of the fact that that is my background and my as well. I'm a social worker, but I have a lot of religious education, religious focus as well in my work. So this was kind of the logical extension of that.
Well, that makes sense. Now, when do you think internet pornography took off? You know, we hear that actually computers and technology would not be as successful if it weren't for internet pornography, that was really at the foundation for technology to boom as it did. So when do you think that became a real problem?
Well, the point in time that I direct attention to is 1995-96, when the web seemed to become more accessible. You had a lot more internet companies starting up. You had a lot of it became accessible. I think it merged into public consciousness. Now, as far as what you're saying about porn being the first industry on the web, that was very true. It was the first industry to make money off of the internet. The pornography industry spearheaded a number of the different technologies that were that became web-based, everything from what we would call PayPal now onto a number of other things. And, you know, it was interesting because some of the first apps or first attempts to get internet pornography available through the iPhone, it took exactly 1 month after the iPhone was released before everything had been essentially reshot or remade in such a way that it could be viewed on an iPhone. So it's a very dynamic industry that also, though, has run onto hard times in the last few years because of the abundance of free porn on the web.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you know, how widespread do you think internet pornography is, especially porn use?
Well, in terms of on the using end, I think it's impossible to say. There's no way to track and say how many people are using porn. On the provider end, there have been a few studies that I've been tracking over the last 5 or 6 years, and what they find is around 22 to 25% of web pages and about 25 to 28% of websites are reserved for internet pornography. So you've got essentially a quarter of the internet being porn in various forms.
Yeah, and that's mind-boggling when you think of all the websites out there that 22 to 25% of web pages or websites would actually be internet porn. What do you see in your practice in terms of how it's affecting kids, internet porn?
Well, it's been interesting because I've, both in terms of kids who have access directly, I'll speak to that first.
Mm-hmm.
What I find is when I've got parents who bring kids into me, I find that they get hooked on it very fast. And they tend to be very much like adults in some of the things. They tend to be isolating. They tend to be very secretive. They feel a lot of shame about it because, again, they know it's wrong at some level, and yet they find themselves very much unable to stop. Now, on the other side, how are kids affected by their parents' youth? Or another adult in the household, they're affected in the same way they are any time that there's conflict in the family. There's, you know, you've got conflict between the parents and the kids are withdrawing. You know, another way we can measure that is family law attorneys now for about the last 10 years have been noting that internet porn use has been an increasing reason for divorces being filed. So kids
mm-hmm.
are very much affected by it that way as well.
Well, yeah, and my experience has been there's a lot more supervision. They ask for supervised visits when that has been known to be true. And I don't know about you, Chris, but I see a lot of young females. And my experience is males tend to isolate and they're more secretive. They know it's wrong. Whereas, you know what, my experience with young females, 10, 11, 12, 13, is that they actually act out what they see with young boys. And they do that on the bus, and they do that in school, and they do that at each other's homes. So they actually are not only the recipients, but oftentimes the instigators of what they see through the media. So,
yeah.
You know, they objectify themselves.
Truly, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
With the boys, and I haven't seen data to back this up, but I suspect this proves to be the case pretty universally. The boys will tend more towards masturbation and isolating behaviors. A certain percentage, of course, will use this as a springboard to seek being sexual outside of, you know, with other people, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, what makes porn, especially internet porn, so appealing to some people? What's your theory on this?
Well, in my reading and also my work with people, I don't think there's one universal factor. I think there are a couple of things. One we know is that while sex is appealing, different people have different levels of drive and desire and attraction to it. You know, in some of the early studies of sex addiction, they were oftentimes pointing to the single largest factor being sexual abuse among people who became sex addicts. That's not proving to be the case among porn addicts from what I've been able to read and in my experience with clients. There is something in some people that react more with greater strength than with others. Again, I compare it to cocaine addiction. There are some people for whom that first exposure to cocaine is absolutely the beginning of the end for them. They are addicted to it, and they'll tell you this, they were addicted to it from that first use. And I think the same kind of thing I've seen as well with porn addicts. There's a tendency for some people to just take off on it. There's a tendency for other people to say, no big deal, and go on with their lives. I don't know that there's a predictive factor there.
Yeah, and I would agree with you there that oftentimes it seems like people that are addicted to sex addiction, either have trauma reenactment or they experience some sort of heightened euphoric high that occurs from that very first episode, and that's the driving force. And I think that's what you and I are both seeing in internet pornography, is that more often than not, it is something genetically that goes on, whether it's an enzyme or a neurocircuitry that occurs just as it does with a certain kind of drug, coke, crack, meth, that kind of stuff. So I see a lot of dual diagnosis in that I see that a lot of people that use coke or crack will also be into internet porn. It's almost like they're a simultaneous ritual. What do you see?
That is sometimes the case. In my experience, particularly when I start, again, I started in this with substance abusers. So one of the things I found is that people get far enough into cocaine use and they pretty much lose their sex drive altogether. The drug pretty well depletes all the neurochemicals that would feed that. So it's kind of a mixed bag there. Some people, cocaine in my experience, will kind of heighten the sex drive at least for a while, and with others it seems to wipe it right out.
So why do you think that internet porn becomes so addictive?
It just seems to hit the right buttons for people. If we speak neurologically for a second, the pleasure centers of the brain are stimulated by certain very pleasurable things, and certainly sex is at the top of the list of pleasurable activities. For some people, that seems to be exaggerated. There are, of course, pleasure seekers and people who just seem to be wired that way. And in my experience, again, without any statistical studies, in my experience, many people who get hooked on porn quickly are those kinds of pleasure-seeking personality types.
So they actually have the personality, as far as you're concerned, or they have the neurologic circuitry to be very enticed by those pleasure centers. As you said, it's saturated.
Right, and which came first, the personality or the neurology? There's no real telling, but they do seem to go hand in hand.
Well, and you know, there's always a certain amount of denial that can occur when somebody is dabbling or full-blown in pornography. And certainly I get a lot of the, well, this is just boys being boys. So I'm curious, with the people that you assess, when do you believe it's a problem, and how do you help people assess whether internet porn has affected them negatively?
Certainly. It's a real good question, and that's what I try to approach in the booklet. It's pretty brief and to the point, but in the second chapter, I give them three self-tests. The first one has to do with calculating how much time they spent using internet pornography, and that can be pretty surprising to folks. I just had a guy in today who, third appointment, he looked at the booklet and was shocked by how long he'd used it. The second self-test...
Now, can I ask you for a second, because you were talking
sure.
about time, and obviously one of the things you do is you decide, you ask them how many years they've been involved with internet porn, and then you ask
right.
them how many days per week they've used it, and then how many hours per day.
Right.
Right,
to
so
calculate.
They break that down.
Okay, so basically what I'm asking them to do is use simple arithmetic to calculate how many hours of pornography they've seen in their life.
Mm-hmm.
I have had people come to me and do the calculation and have as few, and I don't think it's really few, as few hours as 50 and hours of porn watching and say, I'm addicted.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've had people who have come to me and in doing the calculations, their numbers have ranged in the thousands. The highest one was a fellow who was estimating at 10,000 hours over a period of 10 years. That's a half-time job.
Well, absolutely. And, of course, because this booklet deals with the fact that it can be a spiritual issue, because it takes them away from their time with themselves, with their family, and with their own spirituality. So
sure.
it really deprives them of being a whole person. It really takes
sure.
that away for them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
and
that's
for the
test
second
one.
Yeah. Test two asks questions about character. So we look at things about asking questions about lying, about hiding porn use from people, about withholding that information from appropriate people within their religious body. We take on and look at how it may have led them to take time or take part of their lives away from work and family and friends, you know, whether they've spent money on it, whether they've gotten in trouble.
Whether it's interfered with their sleep.
Right, whether it's interfered with their sleep, with their lives. The idea being to say, okay, look at how this has reshaped you as a person. And while people are oftentimes very, very shocked at their number in the first test, when they stop to look at this and say, oh, well, look at this. I've become more responsible. I've become deceitful. It started to interfere and make me love it in ways that I didn't even realize. Then all of a sudden people start looking and saying, okay, who am I? Who is this person, me, who has become so engaged with internet sex that it's changed me like this?
Well, and I know that in my caseload, I certainly meet men and women who make excuses. They avoid family functions. They don't go to the soccer games. You know, they're looking at porn at work. You know, so they are really, and I'm sure for many of our listeners, they know that it's interfering with their life, but because they're in that state of denial, until they take a direct look and start accounting for how they're different, they just don't believe it's as bad as it really is. And so
sure.
Test number two takes a look at how has it shaped your character and how is it interfering in your life, both work, family, and spiritual.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And people are surprised because oftentimes the response is, well, I only look at it for half an hour a week, 20 minutes, twice a week, whatever else it is. And then when they start saying, oh, wait a minute, this is really changing me over time. Then they start to open their eyes and say, okay, maybe this isn't quite so harmless as I want to tell myself it is.
Yeah, I would agree. And anytime you're lying, it does a number on your self-esteem. So you feel some shame and some guilt. And so even if you rationalize that one party that rationalizes it, there's a whole other part that says, I'm not being honest with my wife or husband. I'm depriving the kids of time with me. I'm not doing my Bible reading or doing the chores I need to do. It really does kind of replace a lot of daily activities. Wouldn't you agree?
Sure. Yeah. Sure, absolutely. You know, if you stop and think, if a person uses it 2 hours a week, that's 100 hours a year. That's
mm-hmm.
a substantial block of time that a person has nothing to show for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I really enjoy test number three because it also, I think even when people are in denial, they have to be answering yes to all of these questions about taking away the control and did you ever say you were going to stop and then you couldn't or you thought you could minimize it and then you didn't. What made you decide
right.
to break it down into test number three?
Yeah, the notion of losing control of porn use, I got to say that overall the questions here follow some proposed guidelines for internet pornography uses of following the DSM approach to diagnostic criteria. So losing control of use, losing control of substance use or porn use is a major diagnostic criterion for looking at any addiction. And so when I started breaking this down into loss of control, it again is an attempt to impress on users that this has had much more an effect on them than they realize. Some people can justify themselves however much time they're putting in. They can continue to justify at times the effects they're having on their character. But when they start looking at loss of control and they start seeing, oh, you know, this is taking me outside of where I think I have my life. You know, if I'm losing control of my thinking, I'm losing control of my emotions, I'm losing control of my actions in very subtle ways, then that smirk that kind of comes with folks who really think they've got it all together, that starts to fade. The purpose of the three self-tests is to be exploratory, but also to dismiss some of the myths that people tell themselves about the effects of internet porn on their lives.
Yeah, and I know that the common research is that, believe it or not, and I'm sure you've heard this, that internet porn is viewed more during the day, during work hours, than even at night. And so when you think about the fact that they're probably looking at it at night, but they're also interfering with their workday too and taking that risk, the jeopardy that they can experience is absolutely huge.
Sure, and I suspect, as you have, I've had a number of clients who've come in and said, I was fired from this job because my company had monitoring software on all the computers, and somebody from IT said, hey, you know, we know this, or the boss came to us and said, look, we're seeing you use this porn, and company policy says don't use porn, so you have to go.
Mm-hmm. Or they get a chance, they get one chance, and they're still not able to control that. For whatever reason, they go in that grandiose thinking where they just don't think they're going to be monitored again. And even if given a chance, it's not enough because they absolutely have no control.
Right, right.
Yeah, and that's
a very hard
different
thing.
Yeah, that's different than other sexual addictions because it almost becomes a habit disorder.
Right, there's some would call it an impulse control disorder. They just can't not do it is the best way that I can say it. They can't say no to themselves when the impulse hits.
Right, and they can't say no to themselves because they don't have the proper infrastructure to replace some of that neurocircuitry and to support them in creating new behaviors, which is what getting a good sponsor and going to 12-step meetings and getting to a good therapist is all about.
Right, right. There's a need consistent with the 12-step approach of facing truly how powerless one is in the face of this and the mess that's made in one's life, and then being able to seek out the kind of help and support from others. Just recognizing, hey, I can't do this by myself. Again, men tend to isolate around this, and once they do, the need for help becomes both stronger and a little bit harder for them to avail themselves of.
So has your book been helpful for those people that may not have a spiritual connection?
Yes, I've had some who've looked at it and you know, It's not heavy on the religious side at all, but who've been able to look at it and say, yes, even seeing past the religion, I can see I've got a problem here. Many of the resources that I offer people about how to manage it, how to remove it from their lives, many of those resources don't require anything religious or spiritual at all. You know, such things as where you position your computer using blocking software, tools like that don't require one to be of any particular belief system at all.
Right, and I don't want to divert us too much, but if you had to recommend two different types of software that you think are most effective in combating internet porn, what would you recommend?
Well, what I'll say is I won't give to manufacturers. That I have strong sense for my clients and for my research, which ones are best. But there are two things that I think are helpful.
Mm-hmm.
One is blocking software.
Uh-huh.
These are basically internet providers who are set up. They have basically any website request that you submit will go through their IPs, and they or their sites, and they will check out the IPs of any sources or any sites that you want to go to. If they find that, hey, Chris wants to go to a site that's on our list of sexually inappropriate sites, they'll block it, and they'll send a message back to my computer that says it's blocked. The other type of software that's really effective for many people is reporting software, and that's the kind of software that will just kind of passively sit in the background making a list of all the websites you visit and their web addresses, and then at some prearranged, agreed-upon time frame, will then email that list to someone that you agree to. So you may have an accountability partner, it may be a spouse, it may be, I've had clergy people who functioned in this way, someone to whom you're going to report or allow this report to be seen of all the use, all the websites you've been to.
And of course, for our listeners, obviously, this software also identifies, for instance, YouTube, which can be very sexually promiscuous and provocative and
certainly
start that fantasy sex going when it comes to internet porn. So
yeah,
it doesn't have to just be pornography. It can be what is well known as areas that, you know, for moms and for kids, YouTube may not be a problem. But in terms of a sexual addiction and internet pornography use, it can really put you in middle or inner circle behavior.
Certainly, and one of the things that some of the more advanced blocking software packages will do is they will block the over 18 websites on YouTube, or I should say videos available on YouTube, and allow you access to the standard, the, if you want to call it, the GMPG-rated films on YouTube. So there is a way even for people to be able to use YouTube constructively, putting the blocking software on.
And what'd you call that, GMGP?
I'm sorry?
What'd you say
I said the G and PG rated areas of YouTube,
okay,
like the movies.
Yes.
One of the things that I oftentimes tell people is, and I say this to parents, I say this to other groups when I speak about this, you know, I'll say, you know, you would never go out on the interstate without your child seatbelted in. And I say, think of this protective software as sort of the seatbelt to the information highway. Because really when it comes down to it, it's so easy. It's so very easy to access that there needs to be some kind of a barrier in there.
Mm-hmm. That's a good metaphor. Absolutely. So now let me ask you, what resources do you offer to help people, you know, with the various levels of porn and porn use problems, in particular, people with the biggest problems?
Sure, with addiction?
Uh-huh.
I offer a number of different things. Again, the booklet's organized, recognizing the problem at what we call the big, bigger, and biggest level. And I offer some resources at each of those lower levels. When you get to addiction, I encourage people to use 12-step groups. I encourage people to meet with a therapist, a counselor, to learn about internet pornography addiction. I've got a small bibliography in the back for that. And then there are a number of other exercises, you know, looking at a sexual history. And then I ask them to consider things like, if they are particularly adept at working around things like blocking software, to consider going internet free, you know, to take a look and say, maybe I need to cut way, way back or even cut down or cut out any kind of internet use. So challenge people to take a look at where they are and seek out various resources.
So, of course, if they go internet-free, that means their phone can't have a data plan. They have to use it solely as a phone. And, I mean, it really does alter the way people function in today's world.
Well, and there's an important piece I do want to offer your listeners, Carol. And that is that on the iPhone, and I hate to get specific to brands, but on the iPhone, one can actually password protect certain of the applications. So one of the ways to do that is to have someone else have the password for their web browser. That will severely limit one's ability to get to internet pornography, because Apple also does not allow pornography apps in the Apple store. So it makes it so that an individual can't really access. They still get resources through other applications, but they can't just generally go searching out on the web casually through a browser as they might and I know that the that none of the other internet available phones is able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything's in the cloud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you really have to stay up on your technology, don't you? To be able to work with this population.
Yeah, it's changing all the time. It really is. Mm-hmm. And again, if a person doesn't want to do an iPhone, you can get a straight phone that will do texting and will do phone calls, of course, and you let go of this. The thing is, because it's so easy to get to, because it's so available, I think anybody who's honest with himself or herself who is also hooked on porn has to say, you know, one look gets me right back to it.
Absolutely. And we even hear that one look for somebody who's done a good job of abstaining from it will not only take them back to where they were, but they'll actually progress further. And so that makes it really, really difficult. Now, do you find that people can be successful in abstaining from internet porn without 12-step groups?
Again, that's a question of severity.
Mm-hmm.
It's a question of severity. I've seen people who've gotten out of it, got into it and out of it pretty quickly. Folks who don't necessarily have a strong addictive nature to their personalities, and they can't. People who really get hooked on it and who find themselves answering a lot of the questions yes on test 2 and 3, whose numbers are in the high hundreds or into the thousands on the number of hours that they've watched, they're pretty well gone in that sense. They need some kind of external support, and I think the 12-step group's probably the best thing going at this point.
And based on your knowledge, how would you differentiate between SA and SAA and the different 12-step groups?
Oh, certainly. Sex Addicts Anonymous, SAA,
mm-hmm.
is a group that was started out of Minnesota about 30 years ago, 35 years ago now. And their approach is to say each individual needs to identify his or her addictive behaviors and also develop a clear sense of what's also healthy sexuality. In SA, Sexaholics Anonymous, the differentiation is primarily that the fellowship defines what abstinence is and what healthy sexuality is. In SLAA, Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, there is a focus both on the partnership. I heard just before you introduced me and brought me in, you were
mm-hmm.
talking about somebody who's going to be talking about love addiction in the next couple of weeks.
Right.
There is a romantic high that may or may not be sexual, although, you know, the logical end of that is that it moves into sex as well.
Right,
so,
they usually go hand in hand at some point.
Right. And there's so you've got three organizations there that kind of cut the pie up a little bit differently.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you know how old SA is?
All three of these fellowships got started in that same range about 35 to 40 years ago. SA started out in California, Simi Valley. SLAA started in the Boston area. All three of them were started by people who had some experience and understanding of addictions through other 12-step programs, Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, and the like, and found that they could generalize it successfully to sex and love addiction to help people with that problem as well.
Yes. Now, oftentimes when I'm dealing with any kind of internet porn, I obviously prescribe a 12-step program in addition to a good sponsor and a good therapist. I have had lots of people, I shouldn't say lots, but it's probably 10 to 20% that say, you know, I don't have a higher power in my life. I don't believe in that. And so they're into things like sexual recovery through Recovery Nation and other organizations that are not necessarily spiritually based. Can you speak to that at all? Because obviously there's a great religious component to your booklets.
Right. The reality is all of us have higher powers in our lives. We have bosses. You know, we have parents. We have a government.
Spouses.
We have police force. We have spouses. I wasn't going to say that. I'll leave that one for you.
Thank you.
We have other powers in our lives. And, true to the AA experience, going back to the earliest days, the higher power doesn't have to be any notion of a god or deity. It can be just as easily the group, nature, some sense of a force in the universe. I've seen all of those work for people at different levels. Now, the organizations you're talking about, some of those actually sort of propose, wisdom and better human understanding and better, good orderly direction, as some have talked about it, as a successful source of help and resource.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been doing a lot of talking about unhealthy sexual behaviors, and obviously that's what this show is dedicated to talk to and kind of expose some of the issues that are going on, because we don't want people to feel shame. We want them to get the help that they need to combat the shame and guilt. Can you tell me a little bit about what are your thoughts on healthy sexual behaviors? I was sitting there saying to myself, a lot of people are obsessed with sex, but then we've also got sexual anorexia, which obviously a lot of couples go through, especially when they have been looking at enough porn that all of a sudden their own sex lives seem boring and non-existent. So what do you think healthy sexuality is all about for people?
Well, when I talk about sex in general, what I talk with people, first of all, in terms of the act, I talk about sex as being sort of on three levels. I talk about that level that's copulating, that is really just an act that animals can do. I talk about it as having sex, which is kind of an in-between phase, and the third being making love.
Mm-hmm.
From a religious perspective, making love would involve some kind of marital commitment, sacrament, mm-hmm. or however one understands that. Within that notion of making love, what I find from talking to people is that sexual activity and sexual arousal seem to come from a different base. So often in the other two, copulating and having sex, it tends to be about visual and auditory stimulation. It tends to be about arousal as a more basic or base response to stimulation. In making love, what I find is that sexual arousal comes more from intimacy. So people find themselves aroused as a result of emotional and intellectual and spiritual and then finally some kind of physical intimacy before they get sexually aroused. And so there's a depth there. There's a sense of unity and connection there that is so often missing from, just going out and meeting somebody and both parties agreeing we're going to have sex.
Well, that makes sense. And that's, obviously when this issue first came out, I believe that a lot of therapists just really didn't understand how cybersex could replace that drive for sexuality. And obviously what you've just talked about is the commitment, the unity, and the connection that you feel in healthy sexuality.
Right.
With cybersex, it really is all visual and auditory stimulation, and it's taking those bounds to the next level. It's kind of an intrigue and a risk involved in looking at that. How long do you think it takes somebody who has seriously been addicted to internet porn, how long do you think it takes them, on average, to get healthy if they are working the steps, they have a good sponsor, they've got a great therapist, and they're doing their bibliotherapy?
Well, what I see is it can take people in the range of 6 months to a year to kind of develop this alternative, because the first thing they sort of need to do is to wind down from the high level of excitement they're living in. I mean, this is, you know, in the stimulation of the pleasure centers in the brain, there are a lot of excitement-oriented neurochemicals released, serotonin and the like. And so it's not an easy thing to just say, I'm going to stop today, and tomorrow my brain's going to be back in a healthy place. When we start thinking about moving sexuality from this stimulation, as you say, from auditory and visual stimulation into intimacy, well, what we know is a lot of the movement of their lives during the time they've been using the porn has been away from that intimacy. So it can take time to develop that intimacy as well. And that's assuming they've got someone left in their lives, a spouse or close partner, who still wants to be intimate with them. So in some ways, it's a little bit like how long does it take for a couple where there's been infidelity to reestablish a healthy sexual relationship? Well, there's a lot of work to be done there in terms of developing intimacy, developing closeness, and trust and the like again.
Yeah, so the answer to that question is, how much work are they willing to put in it? And that helps to determine how long it's going to take.
Right, and when a person is working a recovery program and they focus on that, they are doing, in many ways, the best thing they can do and providing their loved one with the best resources in themselves to be able to grow in that way. So the recovery and the relationships tend to dovetail.
Mm-hmm. That makes total sense. And what we know about brain chemistry and neurocircuitry is it typically takes 3 to 5 years of very healthy behaviors for things to readjust so that they don't crave and they don't look for that euphoric recall, and they begin to enjoy again that commitment, unity, and connection.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the roots of it will be 6 months to a year. The fullness of it, yeah, 3 to 5 years.
Okay. So as we end tonight's show, what would your advice be for anybody who believes that they may have an internet pornography addiction?
Well, I would say go to my website, directactionbooks.com, and get a copy of my booklet. It's also available on Amazon, but if a person wants to order large numbers, there's a discount starting at 10 and working its way up from there. First of all,
I would say read the booklet. Yeah, it only costs $4.95 in and of itself. And then, yeah, if they buy for their churches or schools, it can get as little as $2.50 a piece, depending on quantity.
Right. So the first thing, get a copy of the booklet. There are some good websites up. Again, I hesitate to push anybody's particular resources, although, again, the 3 12-step groups that we mentioned each have things on their websites.
Mm-hmm.
That are good resources towards getting a handle on it. They could call you. They could call me. There are a few other therapists in town who do focus on this problem as well. And
so they can get a hold of you through directactionbooks.com?
They can actually get me at my other website, which is directactioncounseling.com.
Okay.
Or they can find me on the web, Chris Countryman, LCSW.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for educating and assisting in this very important issue. And I wish you the best and love your book and would highly recommend that anybody pick it up.
Thanks, Carol. Thanks for having me on. And I wish the best for all of your listeners tonight.
Thank you so much. Have a great night.
Take care. You too.
Okay, so we are going to end the show tonight. I hope you got a lot out of Chris's information, because he truly is an expert in the field of getting internet pornography out of your life. Again, you can go to his website, www.directactionbooks.com or directactioncounseling.com. His name is Chris Countryman. And as I say at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times, so fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. Take a look at your issues and get the help that you need, because you deserve the support. We'll see you next week.